Hello and welcome to the Equalizer podcast. I'm your host, Ariana Cascone, and I'm here today with Andre Carlisle of Diaspora United to recap a busy weekend of women's soccer for us. So the U.S. women's national team played, and then we had a full slate of NWSL games this weekend, right? So before we get into that, how are we doing today, Andre?
I'm doing good. It's been, like you said, it's been a fun weekend. We've had national team, we've had NWSL, NWSLing, which we'll get into a bit. But yeah, it's been very fun.
Yes, I totally agree. So for today's show, we'll sort of split it up into halves and we'll start with discussing the U.S. women's national team and their send-off match against Wales that happened on Sunday, July 9th. So we're recording this on Monday, so yesterday. And then we'll take a short break and then we'll get into some NWSL madness that continues to happen with, you know, the last set of games before we have the league's regular season break as we prep for the World Cup. So thinking about that send-off match, right, the United States ended up winning by a 2-0 scoreline thanks to some Trinity Rodman heroics, right? So Trinity Rodman scored both goals in this win, and they came rather late in the game, right? So the first one was 76th minute and the second one 87th minute. So what was your overall impression of this match, Andre?
Oof.
Loaded question, right? Lots it to unpack
is,
here.
It is a loaded question, but perhaps not as loaded because I mean, we've kind of been watching this U.S. women's national team perform similarly, especially the first half has been the most familiar that they've looked under the tenure of Vandenovsky. I know that a big part of that is missing Katarina Macario. A big part of that is missing Mal Swanson. Like, those are players that are very important in terms of linking the midfield to the attack and being able to spring forward. And we just haven't seen that dynamism from midfield. They need players to play a little bit deeper so that you can, you know, move the ball around in midfield and then spring it forward. But we just haven't had that. And the frustrating thing is we haven't had Macario for a while now. So have we adjusted? No, not really. We haven't had some Mal Swanson for a bit now. And have we adjusted? No, not really. I guess I should say a bit. It was April when she tore her patellar tendon, or had it torn for her, I suppose. But yeah, this team continues to be a bit frustrating because you see what they can do when they get out and run. And the young attackers they have want to get out and run. And when you give them through balls, when you allow them to press, they are very difficult to deal with. I think Sophia Smith on her own is difficult to deal with. Trinity Rodman is difficult to deal with. Alyssa Thompson, all of them, Lynn Williams, but you put them on the pitch together and you should be having some fun, yet we kind of have to wait for that to happen. So I'm glad we saw it, but I'm still hesitant about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at too. It was a little bit frustrating, you know, in the first half and maybe even I could say the first hour of the game, but perhaps it shouldn't have been frustrating because I maybe should have been expecting it given what we've seen from the national team and you know, what you said about having these players out like Macario and, you know, Swanson, like these players have been out and the U.S. hasn't adjusted. And that's been the story all along, right? Julie Ertz is back because the midfield experiment just, we didn't really have a solution other than bringing Julie Ertz back. So I have this a little bit of cognitive dissonance, excuse me, as I'm watching this team, because I don't want them to be this like stagnant sort of individual talent, flashes of brilliance team.
Yeah.
But in a way, that's what they have been. And so I don't know why I was expecting anything else in this game.
Well, you know what? I'm with you. I kind of had to calm myself down a bit too, mm-hmm. watching it, because I was thinking, okay, you know, obviously you don't want to like show everything you've been working on, you know, in a send-off game before a World Cup. That'd be a bit silly, but you at least want to go out there and show a heightened level of performance, right? You want to see that the team is ready. Like, there are some things they've been working on that we haven't seen yet, and they're ready to go into the World Cup. And like you said, for the first hour, it didn't look like it. It looked the same. And you were just looking, especially that first half, it was just so dull, so flat. The team looked like restricted. And it was just, it's, again, a familiar performance. But at this point, what this game is supposed to mean, that's like, that's not what you want to see. So I was kind of with you being frustrated. And then I had to check myself and be like, oh, yes, they still have a lot to work on, and that's not a great thing to be doing in the send-off game. But it's like we keep seeing these little bits of things that keep kind of working in individual moments. I'm hoping that at some point, and by some point I mean like the World Cup, they put them all together in terms of like one game plan and go from the start like that, because that's the team I want to see.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up this idea of, you know, not showing your full hand of cards in this send-off game, right? That wouldn't make any sense. And I completely agree. So that has me wondering, is this starting 11 one that we should expect to see heading into the first group stage game? Or is this more of a starting 11 that could be a possibility, but potentially isn't the go-to for the U.S.?
Yeah, so goalkeeper and back line, that's probably what we're going to get. I think that's what is the first choice across every position in those groups. But midfield, we're kind of looking at Ashley Sanchez, who started. We've seen her be the backup to Rose Lavelle. He says Rose Lavelle is fit enough to play. She's building up, I believe, is what he said after the match. So when I say he, I mean the head coach, Flacco Andonovsky, and that she could play, but didn't give her any minutes in this game. So we're not sure where she's at. So I think if she is healthy, then yes, you get Rose Lavelle in midfield instead of Sanchez. For the attack, the surprise to me was Alyssa Thompson. I really thought that Lynn Williams was going to be get the nod. I thought we were going to see Smith. I thought we were going to see Alex Morgan central. Whether we should or not is a different conversation that I can get into. But I really expected either Rodman or Lynn Williams to get the start on that other wing, especially because, you know, the great thing about the wide, what we think about is the wide players, you know, Lynn Williams, Trinity Rodman, Sophia Smith, even to a certain degree, Alyssa Thompson, is that they can interchange a lot. They like to go, they like to roam. They like to go from flank to flank, wing to wing. They even like to go into central positions from time to time. So I wasn't really expecting Alex Morgan not to start, but I do think that that is something they may have to consider, because once that kind of happened and Lynn Williams came on and you had the Sophia Smith, Trinity Rodman, Lynn Williams trio out there, then they really started getting at Wales.
Yeah, this is another part of the notes that I had to make sure we hit on today. For the attack, I was really surprised to see Alyssa Thompson start. I think maybe part of that was to get her more minutes. You know, we saw Savannah DeMello get her first cap, which I think is important heading into this World Cup. Yeah. I think Thompson by no means had a bad performance, right? I think she was taking players on. She showed some confidence in the attack. I think when she came off, though, and when Alex Morgan came off, that's sort of when the attack did come alive, as you said. So we see Trinity Rodman and Lynn Williams coming on. Something that surprised me, though, about the decisions in bringing those players on is keeping Trinity Rodman as the nine. She comes in for Alex Morgan, and I sort of assumed that Sophia Smith would slide over, and then we'd have Rodman and Williams on the outsides, and that's not what happened. So I'm not entirely sure if we've seen that before, but were you surprised to see Rodman slot in for Morgan?
Yeah, I was very surprised. I expected that shift as well, you know, bring Sophia Smith central, which we've seen a couple times with the national team when Alex Morgan isn't on the pitch. But, you know, it's an interesting one, because it all depends. To me, it's all about style of play, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of look at Trinity Rodman and just her physical build. She's like 5'10". She's decent in the air. You know, she's a very strong player as well. And you kind of maybe look at her as a target forward, but I really don't think that's the best way to utilize her. So I was very surprised. And then, of course, you know, they were hitting into like deep crosses, you know, into the box toward her. And it was like, well, that's one way to do it. But the better way to do it is kind of how they figured it out. Kind of, I don't know if they figured it out on their own, but Lynn Williams sending that through ball to Sophia Smith, her cutting across to Trinity Rodman. That, to me, is how you want to use them. You just be super fluid, get somebody behind the line. They are... all the attackers are smart enough to make secondary support runs to be able to provide, you know, different options. They're very, very good at doing this. It's the game they play week in and week out of the NWSL. Mm-hmm. It's what they want to do. And so, yeah, I did find it very strange that Rodman was the number nine, especially the target, kind of when she was used more as a target. But once that stopped, I was like, okay, I can see it. If you're going to have her do this, it makes a bit of sense, even though I still lean towards having Sophia Smith in those central areas more, mm-hmm. because of just how otherworldly she's been in the league.
Yeah, I think, that sequence where Lynn Williams plays the ball in from deep and split the back line, I was just like, oh my goodness, this is what the national team needs to be doing, right? This
A
is
through
where the
ball.
attention,
Imagine that.
literally imagine that. And then Sophia Smith, playing the ball across to Rodman, that was just, it was all three players involved, brilliant from them. So I hope we get to see more of that. It's rough that it took that long into the game. Granted, these subs came in not that long ago. But something that I thought of when we saw Rodman come in for Morgan is that, we've heard chatter that we all have recognized rather that Alex Morgan really is the only true number nine on the roster after Ashley Hatch was, not named to the roster. And so if Rodman is maybe Alex Morgan's backup and she can play just as well on the outsides, I think it sort of unveils some of Vlad Kwiatkowski's like inner workings of his mind in a way. He's like, okay, there are other players who can play the nine really well. Like you mentioned Sophia Smith and now Trinity Rodman, which we hadn't seen before. So for me, it sort of gave more context to that decision to leave Ashley Hatch home.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been the thing with Ananovsky is it's really hard to tell who's the backup. Like I have these questions for center back mostly. Like we have two known center backs who are playing center back week in, week out. But who's the third center back? Could be Sonic, could be Julie Ertz, could be Kelly O'Hara. I've heard him, somebody mentioned before, and I'm like, I don't know about that one, but okay. So yeah, it's kind of a weird one when it comes to that. And I think the nine position is very similar. But I do think like I was mentioning before, the ability of so many of the what we think of as wide players to play, which is interesting that we still think of Sophia Smith as a wide player. She's been playing as kind of a central striker for Portland for a couple years now. She was in a strike duo last year with Christine Sinclair, and Sinclair is playing in midfield now, and Sophia Smith has been the lone number nine for Portland. So these are players that are like, and same thing with Trinity Rodman this year. She's been playing in part of a front too with Hatch. So it's like it's a 4-4-2, but she's been central a lot under Mark Parsons for the Washington Spirit. So we do have the ability to have some cover there. My thing is just like, how do you utilize them is really the question. Like if you're going to have Trinity Rodman try to play like Alex Morgan, it's not going to go well. If you have Trinity Rodman try to play like Trinity Rodman and let Sophia Smith play like Sophia Smith, hey, now we got something, because all of the attackers that are the kind of the young generation, I say the young generation plus Lynn Williams, because she's in that mold as well. They can cause a lot of problems. And I liked what I saw when they were given the ability to do so.
Yeah, I think this idea of having players play, like themselves is important. I think the idea of players knowing what their roles are is maybe underrated. We have seen so much rotation during of lineups of players in different positions under Vlad Kononovsky. And I remember last summer during the tournament, the CONCACAF tournament, that is, sorry, I think Alex Morgan said, players are starting to really know what their roles are as the tournament went on. And that it almost is like a no-brainer, right? If you're asked to play one position on Monday and another position on Wednesday, that's hard. And we've heard Crystal Dunn talk about that before as her role as a midfielder in Portland and now as an outside back for the national team. And so I guess that adds to another layer of my like, whoa, Rodman's playing centrally now. She was really great yesterday and I'm not surprised that she was great. I was just surprised to see her having almost like learning a new position so close to the World Cup. So I'm really interested to see what this rotation will look like in terms of lineups and also players playing in different positions, because I don't know if the World Cup is really the stage to do something like that. And I say I don't know because I really don't think it is, but I'm not, I'm not a head coach. I'm not as well-versed as these individuals are. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah, that I think it is useful to have players that are comfortable in different roles. Mm-hmm. But I think but to me, that's different than like knowing your role and what to do on the pitch. You can get very confused, or you can just not get the best out of a player just because they're doing too many different things. They're not able to focus on one specific area, or one specific thing. and how they fit into the overall team structure. This is kind of what I've meant, what I've brought up. I've talked about Emily Sonnet before, whereas people kind of note that, and Andonovsky as well noted her versatility. She can play in three different positions: outside back, center back, defensive midfielder. But which one is she the best at? Mm-hmm. The last time we saw her play consistently in one of those positions was center back for Washington Spirit. They won a championship in 2021. O.L. Reyne is playing her kind of as a defensive midfielder pretty exclusively right now, so we'll see how that goes. But do you really, with Andy Sullivan and Julie Ertz there, she's not going to get many minutes there. So then the question is she your third center back? Or are you just looking at her as an outside back? Like, what role are you going to give her? And for the national team, that has never, ever, ever been like decided. It's just like, mm-hmm. she can do a lot of things. We'll bring her. And it's like, okay, sure. But team structures are important. You know, like what role people have is important. I'm sure she'd probably appreciate a little bit of clarity on like, okay, when I'm in the game, this is what I do, how I connect. So yeah, I'm with you. I think ahead of a World Cup, this is a very weird place to be in. But again, I guess I go back to our original point. This is what it's been. So, mm-hmm. okay, here we go.
so it is what it is. One more point I wanted to just chat about before we head into some NWSL things is related to Lynn Williams, right? So I think that the tempo of the game changed when Lynn Williams came into the match. You know, she was the catalyst for that first goal, as we mentioned. And I'm not sure what the actual quote was, but the broadcast mentioned something about Vlad Kwantanovsky saying that Lynn Williams' role was to be a player, like she could be the best 15 to 30 minute like shift player in the world. So coming off the bench and changing games. So I was actually really surprised to hear that. I had assumed, based on what Lynn Williams has been able to produce in the NWSL and also just, you know, her strengths in a vacuum, that she would be playing her way into a starting position. So do you have any thoughts on that? Did you see the original quote from the presser?
Yeah, that I hated it, just to be honest. I'm with you. I thought Lynn Williams had done enough to mm-hmm. be challenging for a starting role. It's just so weird. I mean, he's talked about Lynn Williams being one of the best defensive forwards in the world. Mm-hmm. Well, do you want to take advantage of that throughout 60, 70, 80 minutes? Or do you just want it for 20, 15, 30 minutes at the end of a game? When are you actually going to, like, if you're bringing on Lynn Williams, chances are you're probably going to need to score a goal. So do you really want her then playing as a complete, like her complete game in terms of the defensive side as well? It Right. doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I was a little frustrated because I was like, I thought that was settled. I thought Lynn Williams had done enough. I thought she was called on and showed how much she can impact a game in the Olympics, especially thinking about that Netherlands game when she was like the reason we ended up getting through that one.
Yep.
So yeah, I was disheartened to hear that. I think Lynn Williams has been a great story. It's wild that this is her first World Cup, but if she's going in as an impact sub, I have serious, serious, serious questions about what we expect from the whatever unit is going to start. And to me, it sounds like he's then leaning more towards sticking with the original front line with maybe Rodman instead of Thompson, and we're still going Smith and Morgan. I don't know, but I yeah, that was a weird comment to me, and I did not like it. Didn't like it one bit.
Yeah, I didn't like it, and then I saw what Lynn Williams was able to produce when she was on the field yesterday, and I was just like, okay. And now I understand why I don't like it.
Exactly. That and the wild thing is, like, Lynn Williams does this. It's what she,
All the
it's not
time.
Like she runs out of gas after, like, sprinting for 20, 30 minutes. She's actually just – she's just as fast in like minute five as she is in like minute 75. She can do this all match. She does this all match. And I understand that you want to preserve her and have her at her freshest, but she's used to this. It's what she's been doing for how many years in the NWSL? Like it's just her game. She is one of the best at it. And you just, to me, you want that benefit the majority of the match as opposed to spot duty at the end of a match. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I guess I'm not the coach, so I don't get to make these calls.
Well,
I
agree
to be
with
mad
you.
About him on a podcast.
For whatever it's worth, I agree with you. Okay, so before we dig into some end of your sale happenings, we'll just take a short break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. So this was the last weekend of NWSL regular season action until mid-August. So we'll see lots of Challenge Cup games happening during this World Cup period. But for now, the last regular season game saw the Orlando Pride beat OL Reign 1-0 and Racing Louisville beat KC Current 2-1. Chicago Red Stars, who have been at the bottom of the table, right, also picked up a win 1-0 against Houston. San Diego and Washington Spirit played to a 2-2 draw. And then we saw Gotham beat Portland 2-1. And to wrap up the weekend, we saw last place Angel City beat top of the table North Carolina 2-1. Right. So lots of classic NWSL chaos with teams picking up potentially unexpected wins. Right. So do you have any major takeaways from this weekend?
Oh, yeah. It's funny. I said the same thing like last weekend, too. It's just like the bottom of the table teams, or I guess the not bottom of the table, bottom half teams have kind of like been like, OK, now's our time. Like we've seen Orlando with back to back wins. We've seen Chicago with back to back wins. And now we're seeing Angel City, you know, turn things around, you know, beating North Carolina, which has been difficult to do. So, like, yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm kind of here for it. I know that there's a chatter about this period, you know, with the national team players being away and is it fair and all of this, but I'm kind of liking the little dash of chaos that has been added to what is always a chaotic at WSL.
Yeah, I think the discussion of it, whether it's fair, is a tough one. I don't really know why the regular season is even happening.
Yeah.
Such as, you know, NWSL scheduling. Hopefully next World Cup, we won't have to have discussions like this.
Yeah, every 4 years. We can
so we'll see if they have 4 years to plan. But, you know, I think in terms of seeing North Carolina lose to Angel City, I was surprised just given North Carolina's recent form, right? We were talking on previous pods that, you know, North Carolina had a slate of winnable games, right? They were playing teams that were lower in the standings, potentially going through rougher periods, and North Carolina was able to pick up wins. And then it turned into having the longest shutout streak of all teams and also finding themselves in first place, right? And then they go to LA and they just can't figure it out, right? They score first, they concede 3 minutes later, and then, you know, an own goal essentially does them in. So I don't think that's like a sign of panic by any means, especially given that Portland in second place also lost. but I think on a league, it's kind of interesting for the league because if these lower of the or bottom of the table teams can pick up points, that just means that the gap is closing and it makes things more interesting. You know, thinking about that sixth place cutoff, we have Racing Louisville now in seventh place with 19 points behind the sixth place team, San Diego, that has 21, right?
Yeah, and that's been the fun part is I think you look at the sixth playoff spots, which is kind of top five now. I think San Diego's kind of run into some issues where they're kind of scrapping to hang on to that sixth playoff spot now. But you look at the top five and how close they are. But now you also have some battle. You know, you have some teams that are pretty close to being able to go on a little bit of a run, especially with only what, like seven matches to go, to be able to grab that playoff spot. So it is set up very nicely from a league perspective. I'm sure they're very happy about what this kind of period of play without the national team players has led to. But yeah, specifically, I want to like focus on the Angel City North Carolina Courage game, because I thought that game was super fun. I thought it was a great way to kind of like head into a break of regular season. When we come back, there'll be some Challenge Cup games, but the regular season doesn't kick off for a bit again. So this was fun. This was a very fun game. I think North Carolina has surprised a lot of people. They definitely surprised me. I think aesthetically, they're one of the most fun teams to watch. They love possession. And when they start going forward, their spacing is excellent. You see, every time they go forward, they look so dangerous because it's like every pocket they have a player and they have options to pass. And you kind of look at their goal. It was beautiful, you know, a little cut back and nice little slotted finish from Pinto. And it was great. It was great. It was like, okay, well, the real North Carolina is here. This is going to be tough for Angel City. And then it's not, you know, they score. And then I love that the best team in the league was beaten by a nutmeg and a deflected shot from a natural team replacement player, Elizabeth Eddy, who's just like stepping on the pitch for the first time. Mm-hmm. Just like, this league is wild. But it was great. It was a great moment. And I think Angel City, honestly, I think they deserved it. They played that match very well. They disrupted what North Carolina wanted to do. And I know that shot totals are not like the end all be all stat, but 21 shots for Angel City, 9 for North Carolina Courage. I would not have expected that. I would not have predicted that before the match.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, this, taking a look at the stats, the possession, I think North Carolina was somewhere around 54%. Yeah. And, you know, possession is not the end all be all statistic by any means. That's not what I'm saying. But head coach Sean Ayas has said time and time again, they play possession football this year. And I remember in a press conference a couple of games ago, he asked us, has anybody seen the stats, right? And somebody said, oh, I think it was at 60 or 65 for the Courage. And he's like, that's not good enough for me, right? So for 54%, I'm sure that he and the team are not happy with that number. They are the best when they have the ball. He always says that they won't have to defend when they have the ball. So I think Angel City did a really good job of breaking down the way that they want to play. And, you know, that game-winning goal goes down as an own goal. But like you said, it's sort of hard work by a national team replacement player that ultimately, you know, helps them get on the board. And thinking about Angel City, you know, they're in 10th place with 17 points, but their last four games, it was a win, two draws, and a win. So this is kind of an interesting question. I'm not sure that either one of us will have the answer, but could the playoffs be, you know, in reach for a team like Angel City? Thinking about the fact that there's 7 games to go.
In order to answer that question, I need to know a very specific thing. And the very specific thing I need to know is, when's Kristen Press back?
Oh, man. This is a question that we're all asking. Probably not soon enough for right. them. I wish it was yesterday, right?
But same. Yes. Yeah. And so I think that's the thing. I mean, they have, under Becky Tweed, their performance has seemingly elevated. They're playing a good style that suits the players that they have, and they're able to tactically match up. Like I said, it was interesting how they ended up combating what North Carolina wants to do. And I think you are right when you talk about possession not being an end-all be-all stat, but there is a caveat when a coach and a style is, that's a big part of their identity, and the coach is so open about it. Their previous 3 matches, they've been over 60%. I think their game against Orlando, they were at like 67%. I mean, it's wild how much they want to possess the ball. So being able to restrict them to a number as low as 54 lets you know that they weren't able to do what they wanted to do. And I think when you add that to Angel City's shot total, you see how well Angel City was able to cope. So I think if they're able to continue to find these ways to tactically match up to her stop opponents doing what they want to do and be able to give their attackers some chances, especially if one of those attackers happens to be one of the best finishers in the world in Kristen Press, then we're looking at a difficult team in the second, not even second half of the season, maybe like second, almost third of the season, or third of the season. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm not going to put it past them, but there is 4 points behind San Diego right now. Doesn't sound like a lot, but only 7 games to make it up. And you've got, what, 1, 2, 3 teams ahead of you with more points that could also fight for that spot. It's asking a lot, but we will see. It's going to be intriguing. They go on a little run here, and it's going to be very, very interesting.
I know. I think that's the same for even a team like Chicago. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe even Kansas City. We're talking about 2 points difference between, you know, 10 and 12th place here. So I would say I'd be more surprised given Chicago's sort of very difficult season. just the fact that they're not in 12th place is a little bit surprising to me. But, you know, they're able to pick up, I think, back-to-back 1-0 wins. And, yeah. You know, Kansas City has been hot and cold all season. So
I was just looking at the schedule when they return to regular season play. Angel City's gonna have opportunities. They come back against Louisville, then they play OL Reign, which is gonna be a massive one. That's gonna be kind of a litmus test one, but it's only 7 days after the World Cup final, so don't know exactly what's actually gonna happen there, who's gonna be available. But then they play the Current, which is a team that they need to make sure they beat in order to stay ahead of. Chicago, same thing. Orlando Pride, that's a team right now that's sitting just a couple points ahead of them. Knock them down, take 3 points from them. Houston Dash, exact same situation, but their final game of the season against Portland. So, that
True.
could also be
Well,
dangerous.
it's true. Portland is having the struggles of their own, right? Defensively, which we have
Yeah, very true.
talked about at length on this podcast. But yeah, this really goes with the theme of winnable games. I think there's an argument that every game in the NWSL is winnable because we saw that happen yesterday with North Carolina Angel City. But this is, I think, an ideal scenario for Angel City heading into the back seven games of their season. Each point really is going to matter, and I'm kind of excited for the possibility of a little bit of a decision day type of ordeal in the NWSL.
Oh, that would be so much fun. And they I'm kind of looking at it right now, and they didn't do, oh, hold on, I didn't scroll down far enough. Ooh, okay. So we do finally have one day to end the season.
And they're all the
October
matches.
15th. Yes, all 5 p.m. kickoffs. I'm here for it. Let's do it.
I know. I'll root for the underdogs every single game just so that we can get to a really chaotic match day 22.
Yes,
But,
let's do it.
okay. Well, do you have any closing thoughts, NWSL national team, before we wrap up today?
No, I don't think I have anything that really stands out. I think it's been a great period for the NWSL before, even though there's some question marks about this little, still playing regular season games with so many players away. But like I said, I think the overall narrative of this season has been enhanced by the results in this. And I still don't think it's to the point where some of these teams couldn't have competed. So even though you're missing some pretty key players, maybe Portland will argue against that, because they're on a losing streak. But I think their losing streak, I agree with you, is more so defensive problems than anything else. They've been pretty poor defensively, and that's on them. There's Sophia Smith and Christine Sinclair, and those didn't play defense. They were outlets and they scored goals, but the defensive problems have been there kind of all season. But so I'm looking forward to that. I want to see what the rest of this season is going to look like in the NWSL. I think we're looking great. We've seen some great signings already, and so I'm interested to see how that continues to happen, how that continues to impact the league, who's brought into the league. I know for the Spirit, they got two interesting names in Saar and Battelle. So I'm very, 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 very intrigued about where the league is at right now. It's a good place. For the national team, I'm shrugging my shoulders for the listening audience.
Well, lots to look forward to regardless, right? The World Cup will happen, whether or not the US has the stuff figured out. And lots to look forward to in the NWSL, like you said. So thank you so much for joining me. It's always a lot of fun to get on here and chat. Thanks to our listeners, and a special thank you to our producer, Jacqueline Purdy. For the Equalizer, I'm Ariana Cascone, and we'll be back soon with more on the Equalizer podcast.